Today's program is brought to you by Copper and Kings, pure copper pot-distilled American brandy, aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels. For more information, visit copperandkings.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Buongiorno, you're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli, and we are coming to you a little bit late today. For those of you tuning in live, I apologize. The L train was running on some other time schedule that doesn't exist in the universe. But we are coming to you live from Bushwick. We're here at Roberta's. It's actually a beautiful spring day. And I am excited to have a great guest with you. But before we move on, I want to let you know that if you enjoy this episode, you can always tune in live on Wednesdays at 10-ish on heritageradionetwork.org, or get all of our past episodes through heritageradionetwork.org, or obviously you can subscribe on iTunes and get those uploaded to you directly. If you want more, you can always come find me at one of our restaurants, Del Anima, L'Artusi, La Picho, or Anfora, where I act as the beverage director. I'm excited to get started today. We can welcome back a guest, Kevin Hedges from Vinaioli Selections. Welcome back to the studio.
Thanks, Joe. Good to see you.
And we're with Federico Scarcello from Great Scarcello Winery up in Barolo. Welcome.
Thank you, Joe.
Welcome to New York. What brings you to New York? Thank you for coming all the way out to Bushwick. What is up with your trip this time?
So each year I come in New York once or twice a year to visit a customer, friends. I know you for years now.
Yes.
And to show some new vintage. So the annual trip.
This is part of the life cycle, part of the job, at this point.
Yes, it's strange. All the people think that wine producers stay in cellar and just live in the vineyard, but we travel a lot.
How much of your time is spent traveling throughout the year?
It's difficult to know because each year is different, mm-hmm. but about 1 month for sure. Well, a little bit more. And consider that I have a very small cellar. For that reason, I have not enough and not a big quantity of wine to sell. But for the larger producer, probably they have more than one people that travel all the year.
Yes. And so tell us about your cellar.
So I have a family cellar in Barolo. All my vineyards are in Barolo Village. I have 5 hectares, so really nothing. The total production is around between 25 and 30,000 bottles for here. I grow 2 grapes, Nebbiolo and Barbera, our indigenous variety, and my wine are Barolo, Barbera, and Langhe Nebbiolo.
I love your wines too. Is that enough to sustain a family in Barolo to make 25,000 bottles a year?
Yes. In Barolo, yes. Of course. I have not airplane or sea boat or something, but my life is good. I like it. It's difficult now in Barolo if someone wants to grow to enlarge the cellar because mm-hmm. the price of land is crazy. But I had a good opportunity because my family have this small propriety, and I can do this in the better way that I know.
Yes, I've heard some crazy numbers, like over €1 million per hectare.
I think now for the good vineyard, we are over than two.
Over €2 million euro per hectare.
And grows up in a very, very crazy way.
Wow,
very
fast. That's crazy.
Because there is no land for on the market, so the producer don't sell the vineyard, so...
Yeah, and Kevin, so welcome back. How do you like to think of Scarcello in the? I know you guys have some other great Barolo in your portfolio as well. How do you kind of position them?
Scarcello to me, I mean, he's the most classic. I mean, from the village of Barolo, he's just to me his Barolos are so honest. and true and pure. I mean, I love that he just puts so much love and care into them as well, and he's always holding the wines back and in the cellar, even after they're bottled, at least a couple years before they're released. So definitely, you know, you can experience that traditional style of Barolo, and he will release it when it's when he feels it's ready.
Yeah. And where, so you're in the area of Barolo, within Barolo, where there are so many other great producers as well. Tell us about your specific plot and what that's like.
So majority of my vineyard are located in Sarmassa area. Mm-hmm. Sarmassa is part of the big hill between Barolo and La Morra. The big hill is composed by Sarmassa at the bottom, Cerequio on, and La Serra on the top, and on the right side, Brunate. So it's a famous piece of land. In particular, my vineyard are called Vigna Merenda in Sarmassa because our old farmhouse in the vineyard is Cascina Merenda. And the vineyard around are Vigna Merenda. It's an extremely warm vineyard in the Barolo area because it's a closed valley. Extremely exposed and very humid. So for that reason, we have some extreme result.
Yes. And how do you feel about this this term, like classic or traditional Barolo? It's something that people talk about a lot. I find that I use those terms frequently to help people kind of understand. But what are your thoughts on that?
So this is a good question.
Yeah.
For me, tradition is not the way to make wine, but is the result in the glass. What I mean, the classic Barolo, traditional Barolo, shows you the purity of tannin first, and wine are normally more vertical. The more modern one are more large, more impressive, and in particular, the modern Barolo are more ready, more expressive when they are young. The traditional Barolo need a little bit more time. For that reason, I age all my wine 2 years more in cellar, in bottle, not in strange way, but because the traditional Barolo need a little bit more time. Then, of course, in the last years, there is many influence from the traditional to the modern and the modern to the traditional. Now, the trend is more on the traditional way. I mean, large barrel, less new wood, less toasted wood in the wine. But even maceration is very important. Mm-hmm. For me, the base of traditional wine is on maceration. Long maceration or short maceration. I don't know if one is better of the other, but I do a long maceration and other producers do a short one.
And do you do a temperature control during your maceration?
Honestly, not, yeah. But for one reason. My tank, fermentation tank, are very small, and the quantity is not huge inside. For that reason, the temperature don't go too much
high,
and then I work with spontaneous fermentation. Mm-hmm. For that reason, the start is not very, very fast, and normally we don't have big problem with temperature. Of course, in some vintage, when we harvest a very, very warm grape, we have to pay attention on it and work to control the kind of fermentation. So we do some delestage, something like this, to reduce or push a little bit the power of the yeast.
Yeah, but you don't ever control the temperature.
No.
I think that ambient yeast fermentation it really does give a lot of character to the wine, especially from the vineyard. So when you combine those things like ambient yeast fermentation and long maceration and not using new oak from a great vineyard site, you have a great wine.
So now in our area, we talk a lot about the indigenous yeast so I don't know the right name of the yeast. But for me, the big difference is between the spontaneous fermentation.
Right.
So fermentation that start with the yeast that come from vineyard, from the cellar, from the barrel. Honestly, I don't control in the juice which is the yeast that ferment the wine. But for sure, in the spontaneous fermentation are different kind of yeast that do different part of fermentation. In the start, there are some families, and then other yeast do the big part of work when the fermentation is more in the part when we have alcohol in wine. Mm-hmm. The first family of yeast quit their work and other family continue. So for that reason, I think, I feel it in my wine, there is more complexity. When I start, I was working with selected yeast. So I have the two situations in front, and I see that wine are a little bit more complex. Of course, the spontaneous fermentation are a little bit more complicated. You have to pay more attention. And in particular, I think, I have not the experience with large quantity, but I think it's very difficult to do it with the large quantity in the big, mm-hmm. big tank. Mm-hmm. I think
that makes that makes a lot of sense. That when you have a large quantity, you have all many different types of yeasts, and obviously also the temperature can go too high and ruin it can ruin your wine.
Goes high in a very fast time, so this is the problem.
Have you made? You said that there's been an exchange from the more modern producers, the more traditional producers. Have you adopted any of the more modern approaches as well?
Now we talk about style, just cellar style. Mm-hmm. But the most important part of our work is in vineyard. And vineyard style, have to talk about vineyard style for a long time, because normally
it's
anyone...
It's much more important.
Yes.
And it's more interesting, too. I mean, in the cellar, every cellar looks very similar, right? But the vineyard's what's so unique in particular.
Yeah. And then each producer adapt his work to the specific vineyard, because he know it very well, because he follow it day by day. And then really we spend, we talk about how much time we spend traveling. I told you 1 month, but we spend 7 months in vineyard, even more. And then in cellar, honestly, the real work is 1 month.
Right.
Then we follow the wine. We try to preserve the wine, but we made wine in 2-3 weeks, so we decide all in the maceration time, the fermentation. When the wine enter in wood, we just re-rack the barrel, and that's it. But the big work, the big decision that we do are in the vineyard, day by day. If cut one grape more or one grape less, mm-hmm. how we have to do for the soil. For a long time, we don't consider the soil. We just use the soil to plant the plant inside, and then we need a dry and hard soil to go in with the tractor. Now we have a different approach, really different approach.
And you say we, you mean people from Barolo in general? No?
Yeah, is a fast, fast and furious revolution. Because all the producer, you know, Barolo is a strange situation, because you have a very small parcel, one attached to the other. And it's difficult to cover one parcel or to do something that anyone see. The other one see what you do, and we talk about at the bar, and there is a lot of curiosity, of course. And this makes a fast revolution. When you change something, many others are interested in, and they follow your result.
Interesting. That's very interesting. It's similar to Burgundy in that way.
No, Burgundy is much more, because the line in Burgundy are very attached.
You might have just more. Two rows, but here at least your vineyards are all they're all open. That's so interesting. I want to talk to you more about this kind of soil revolution and organic viticulture, but we're going to have to take a quick break. We'll be back with more after this.
Breathe, breathe, please. Let it off, get it off. Breathe, breathe, please. Set it off, let it off, get it off. Breathe, breathe, breathe.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, the executive producer of Heritage Radio Network, also the host of Full Service Radio, and I want to talk to you about brandy. I was lucky enough to visit Louisville, and we all know Kentucky is whiskey territory. However, the best thing I had to drink was brandy. I got to visit Copper and King's distillery, and they make pure copper pot distilled American brandy aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels, matured with rock and roll. That's right, sonic aging. They're playing music to the barrels. The stuff is double distilled, non-chill filtered, unadulterated by bois, sugar, or caramel color. And this stuff is feisty, rambunctious, with a long, smooth finish. The stuff isn't made exactly in the style of an international brandy or a cognac. It's more along the lines of an American whiskey. I can really be honest here and tell you, I'm not just reading you an ad, I'm giving you a tip. American brandy, you're not seeing it everywhere. Copper and Kings is doing it incredibly well, and they're cool people. The distillery is full of incredible art. Like I said, they're playing rock and roll to the barrels. So again, Copper and Kings, pure copper, pot distilled American brandy, aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels. That's copperandkings.com. Drink it neat, put it in a cocktail, sub it for your brown spirits, experiment, have fun, get funky. This stuff is awesome.
All right, we're back with Federico Scarcello and Kevin Hedges. We're talking about Barolo. And when we left, we were talking about this change of more attention to the soil, which didn't happen before in Barolo. Federico was saying that people were paying much more attention to making soil that was hard and brittle so you can come through with a tractor, and it was more about the aging of the wine maybe or just the grapes. But now, what have been the actual changes to the approach? How do you improve your soil life?
You have always to consider the story of one region. So in Barolo area, for a long time, the cellar was very small. We have nothing in cellar. And of course, my father generation spent a lot of efforts to renovate the cellar, to build the proper cellar, and to change the wood and blah, blah. And this was the expensive part of the work. They built new cellar, they had a new space to store the bottle and all. And then we had the experience with the modern viticulture for 40 years, 35 years before. Was really, I don't know how I have to call organic, natural, because for a long, long time viticulture was what now we call organic. And this window of 35 years show us that before they preserved viticulture for 2,000 years or probably more, we see that in the new way, so in the conventional, we call conventional way, is more difficult to preserve viticulture in place like Barolo with this pressure of viticulture for a long, long time. Because we see some problem in the soil lose the life. And we have to consider then vineyard takes nutrition from the soil by some fungus, some all what made sostanza organica, I don't know the translation in the soil, is made by the alive elements in the soil. And this is very important. We don't pay attention on it for 30 years, but now we go back in this direction.
So it's using organic viticulture, not using chemicals. But I imagine there had been so much damage that had been done with all of these years of using all these chemicals. Is there a way to improve, or is once you stop using chemicals, once people have, you know, laid off that stuff, does the soil naturally improve and come back to life by itself, or do you have to do something?
Yes, it's not immediate. Of course, if the soil arrive at the end of his life, so become a desert, it's impossible to come back. But we had part of life in soil, of course not enough. Now we try to improve this process, in particular because, like always, we want fastly the result. And for that reason, we have to do something to have the result very, very fast. Otherwise, the soil can rebuild the natural situation, but takes a long, long time. We try to help him to be faster in this process. We work in the soil again. For a long time, we don't touch the soil, but now we work again. We put some seeds that that do the network cleaning of the soil. We try to increase the sustanza organica with compost and with all the normal thing that all producers in the world know it, but probably in some other areas they have less pressure of viticulture. Mm-hmm. In our area, really, you know, Barolo, and there are just vineyards, so we see the problem a little bit earlier than other areas.
Yeah, and it's great to hear that this is going on throughout. Is there someone who is kind of taking the lead and advising people on how to make these conversions, or is it something that's more word of mouth? How do people find out?
Both. Because when one revolution starts, of course, not all the producer takes this way immediately, but then it's natural to be there. 20 years ago, it was 3 or 4 producer that was biologic, probably no one biodynamic in Piemonte, but in Lange in particular. But the biologic producer was looked like so strange man that do some philosophic thing in vineyard. Now we translate this idea and we adapt this idea to each vineyard, but each producer, even the growers that sell grapes, follow this way, because they understand that they need to preserve the vineyard, they need to improve the quality of the grapes. Mm-hmm. So this is really a process. So all of course there are many meeting where we talk about that. Now is a very, very important argumento. So yeah. Sorry, but my English is always very, very difficult, and no, radio for great. Me is yeah. a strain. So
argumento is argument.
It's, okay, yeah, perfect. It's easy. I can talk in Italian. So.
Do you have organized meetings? I know Kevin was mentioning during the break that you're involved with the local producers in some sort of organized way.
Yes, we organize something, and there is a lot of interest. So all time that we organize meeting with someone that told us something about natural way of vine growing, there is a lot of interest from the producer, and I see our meeting, but even meeting organized by mm-hmm. other organization, are always full of people that are very interested.
Yeah, and I've heard a lot of people suppose that prices for Barolo are going to increase significantly. Do you feel like that's going to happen in any time soon?
So this is a very difficult question.
Yes.
I hope that this is right, but for me, but no, I don't think that the price of Barolo jump in a crazy level. It grows up in a good way now, but my preview is that price of Barolo now is a little bit stabilized, mm-hmm. And of course for some particular wine probably grows up a little bit more, but I don't expect a big, big change.
Okay. I'm happy to hear this. I mean, I still think that Barolo is a very great value compared to the other great wines of the world. It's always still a luxury and it's expensive, but compared to the best of Burgundy or Bordeaux or even California, Cabernet and that sort of thing, Barolo always represents for me an incredible value. And when I hear things like $2 million per hectare, it's scary that maybe these wines are going to go bonkers and just go absolutely crazy.
But consider that when we talk about this price for land, in the market you find probably 1 or 2 hectare a year. So
yeah,
don't change the price of the area. So wine producers have land, so they use their land. And this market is really ridiculous. So mm-hmm. it's just so one that want 3,000 more square meter and pay a lot of money, but don't change the big investment of producer, because normally producer don't increase a lot the propriety year by year.
And I agree with that, and I hope that remains the case. And then I just want to talk about the entire region of Barolo. I find even as a wine buyer, as a professional, someone who loves Barolo and who's been there, maintaining, remembering all of the different crews and the different communes, it remains still a challenge for me. Is this something that you found that there's good understanding of, or do you think that Barolo can tell that story a little bit better?
No, of course we have to show better the story of the crew and to explain better the difference between one and the other. This is a big work that we have to do in the future. You see my label, I have one crew label and the other one is called Comune di Barolo. I think in future the village appellation, so the Comune di, become an important appellation because it's easier for the market. Mm-hmm. For people is easier to understand the difference between Barolo and Serralunga. Of course, the people with a lot of knowledge about Barolo area can know very well the difference between Parafada and Cannubi, but the village are 11, the crew are more than 100, so for the basic consumer, of course, the village appellation is easier to remember. And this is the first step. Then you can go deeper in the appellation and you learn about one hill and the other one. But I think the village appellation become an important way to introduce many new consumers to the Barolo complexity.
And this is something that you're legally allowed to do right now. You can write Comune di Serralunga, Comune di Barolo.
From the modification of Disciplinare in 2010, okay, with the 2010 vintage, we are allowed to do it. And I think it's a big change of mentality, too.
I think this will be really helpful for our people.
We worked a long time for this Disciplinare, and now probably it's not the best in the world, but it's much better than in the past. And do the reglementation of those names, and of course we can do better, but now is a good situation, I think.
Do you think there will ever be a Grand Cru system for the best crews? That's something I've heard talked about.
So don't forget about region that have Grand Cru, that have level classification, do it many years ago.
Yes.
When the interest in wine and interest on vineyard was lower. Now become really very, very difficult. And then, honestly, the crew is very important, but for me it's important to show the different name of different land and divide one vineyard to the other in the proper way. Then the value of wine is not just connected with the vineyard. Of course, the vineyard is fundamental, but it's not just connected to the vineyard. Producer, do something.
Yeah, and we're going to have to finish up shortly, but Kevin, I wanted to ask you, which of his wines are on the market right now? What can we find around town?
We're currently offering 2006 and 2008 Comune di Barolo.
That's amazing.
And 2008 Vigna Miranda is a cru wine. He also produces a brilliant Barbera, which we're offering 2011 Barbera and 2013 Nebbiolo. And we should mention his project of Erpa Crife as well.
Oh, that's right. Tell us about Erpa Crife.
So if you remember, we had a tasting at Lartusi years ago. We started with Erpa Crife. Erpa Crife is a fun project. I do it with three school friends when we was in an enological school in Alba, the graduation year. We start this strange spumante made with Nebbiolo, 100% Nebbiolo. We rediscover the tradition to use Nebbiolo for sparkling wine. It's a classic method, 100% Nebbiolo, at least 36 months on the lease, and it's a dosaggio zero, so it's a not dosed wine.
You said you rediscovered this method. This was something that was done many years ago?
Yes. So the tradition of spumanti in Italy start in Piemonte. Of course, start with the indigenous variety at the beginning. The Moscato stay in this way. And for the other variety, they think that, of course, was better to continue with the traditional way, and they start to plant Pinot Noir, Chardonnay for the very classic method. Then we lose a little bit the Spumante tradition in Piemonte, and now there is again the new spring of Spumante, the Metodo Classico in Piemonte. And even the Nebbiolo become very, very curious, because when we start making a rosé wine, and in that time the rosé was considered really very bad wine, we start making a Metodo Classico with an indigenous variety. It was no indigenous Spumante on the market at that time. And then we do a Dosaggio Zero. At that time, Spumante have to be so sexy and,
right,
and not dry and aggressive. So now something give us the reason of our project. And the good satisfaction is that many other producers now start making Nebbiolo Spumante, and this for us is really a big satisfaction. We started when we was young student in enological school, and now it's very, very nice to see a famous producer, important seller that makes the same project.
And now you see many producers who are doing Metodo Classico from indigenous grapes all over Italy.
All over.
Which is
not
exciting.
Just in Italy. Even in Champagne you find it. So this is curious, but probably is a trend. The indigenous variety now are rediscovered, because indigenous variety makes difference in a good way and in the bad way, but makes difference. Yes. And if those variety are indigenous, there are some reason.
Mm-hmm. They've spent all that time adapting to the area, and
that's it.
I'm a big proponent of indigenous varieties. I love it, and also a big proponent of your wines. I am so excited to have you on the show today. Federico Scarcella, Kevin Hedges, welcome back. Thank you so much. Look for these wines. It's pretty amazing to find find Barolo that's well-aged at the cellar, and that tastes so good and so true and real. So thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks to all of you guys for listening. Thanks to the whole team at Heritage. You guys are the best. This has been In the Drink at heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.